Isaiah chapter 58, verses 1 to 14. Cry aloud, do not hold back. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Declare to my people their transgression, to the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily, and to light to know my ways, as if they were a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the judgment of their God. They ask of me righteous judgments. They delight to draw near to God. Why have we fasted and you see it not? Why have we humbled ourselves and you take no knowledge of it? Behold, in the day of your fast, you seek your own pleasure and oppress all your workers. Behold, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to hit with a wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice to be heard on high. Is such the fast that I choose, a day for a person to humble himself? Is it to bow down his head like a reed and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast and a day acceptable to the Lord? Is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of the wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and to bring the homeless poor into your house, when you see the naked to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, "Here I am." If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and speaking wickedness, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness, and your gloom be as the noonday. And the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire in scorched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. And your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to dwell in. If you turn back your foot from the Sabbath, from doing your pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways or seeking your own pleasure or talking idly, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride on the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. This is the word of the Lord. Please be seated.
Susie and I recently had an opportunity to go to Buffalo, New York. My alma mater, Houghton College, invited me to come speak to the students in one of the student body chapels. So they were generous enough to fly Susie and I up there, and we landed in the Buffalo airport, rented our car, and drove on April 19th through a snowstorm to my college campus. Susie looked at me as we rode in the snowstorm and said, "This is why we will never live in upstate New York ever again." But we drove to the campus. We had a great day. I got to speak in chapel, got to hang out with some old professors, see some friends of mine from college that now work there, spoke with students. It was fabulous, but we thought we're not going to spend another night on campus. So we drove back to Buffalo and found ourselves a hotel on Hotwire on the way to Buffalo and checked ourselves in. And then we went to Niagara Falls. Susie had never seen that before. And of course, ate some great Buffalo chicken wings. Not as good as yours, Donnie. I see you up there. You make good wings. And it was just a great, great time. We had a wonderful weekend away in Buffalo, New York. But then it sort of turned a little bit, because Saturday morning, we ate our breakfast there at the hotel, and then I went to the valet and gave him my little card that said, "You had my car and I have your card." And The guy starts, Greg takes my card, he looks at the number, and then he turns around, he's going through all these keys and all these hooks behind him, right? And he's going, he's doing it again. He goes, what kind of car is this? I'm like, it's a Volkswagen Jetta, it's black, I rented it, it's Avis, you know, car keys, you have them? Oh yeah, we got them. He's looking. And then he just sort of leaves. He just runs out the door. And he comes back about 15 minutes later, pretty sweaty, because he's been running parking lots, and he goes, sir, it appears we don't have a car that meets that description. And I said, excuse me? This is valet service, right? Like, I gave you my keys, you gave me your card, you took the car. He goes, well, if you did check in with us, we don't have a car like that. And I said, yes, I checked the car in with you. I just stayed at this hotel. What do you mean? And then I go, are you telling me you lost my car? Sir, it appears we have lost your car. Well, like, I don't know what to do at this moment. I'm not expecting this, right? And I just preached a sermon on anger to a bunch of college kids, so that's going through my mind. And of course, I'm married to Susie, so Susie just starts laughing, right? I mean, she's like, oh, this is a fun adventure. Stuck in Buffalo, you know? And I'm thinking, how am I getting my car back to the rental place? I got a flight that's leaving in an hour and 15 minutes. I got to get to the airport. And it's sort of this mass chaos. And Susie and I are just laughing, enjoying this, trying to have fun with it. We're talking to all the, 24-year-old hotel staff that have no idea what to do. And we're just trying to figure this out. And eventually I get on the phone with Avis. And they're like, look, we'll come pick up your car. Oh, they did find my car. Sorry. In the mix of that, they found my car but never found my keys. So at least I know the car exists somewhere in Buffalo at this point. But Avis says, look, we'll come to the hotel, we'll bring a set of keys, we'll bring your car, you just get to the airport and get on your plane. And I'm thinking, all right, who's gonna pay for the extra set of keys and all this sort of stuff? But the hotel guy's like, we're on it. And I'm like, okay. So Susie and I take a shuttle, we get to the airport, we get on our plane right as the door closes, we just make our flight, and we're like, great. And then about 6 weeks of phone calls with Avis and emails and where's my car and all these extra charges, extra set of keys, a pickup service, $10 a gallon for every gallon of gas I didn't put into the car. And I finally get this itemized receipt. They charge my credit card. I'm like, good. I send it off to the hotel. The hotel's never really gets back to me. Eventually, I hear from them. We're on it. I get a check in the mail. I'm like, whoo, it all worked out. I open up my check. And they don't reimburse the full amount that they owe me. And at this point, I'm not gonna lie, I get a little angry. And so I get on the phone, and I call the manager of this hotel. I have his cell phone by now. We're like buddies, right? And I've got three eyes of my sons. My sons are all watching me as I negotiate this on the phone. But really, what I'm saying is, I just want justice. Mr. Manager of a hotel I won't mention because this will go on the website. Mr. Hotel Manager, I just want justice. I have been so good during this. I haven't said anything on social media. I haven't given you a bad review on Yelp. I haven't called you any names. I haven't even raised my voice. My wife laughed the whole time while you lost our car. All of this stuff, I've been great. Why can't you pay me what you owe me? Sir, mistakes happen. I know mistakes happen, but it's your mistake. I want justice. Pay for it. Sir, it's just a little bit of money. It's my money. I just want justice. I want justice for me. I want this person to fix the wrong that they created, and I want to come out clean on the other side and not paying money to Avis that I don't owe. I just want justice. And as I remember that feeling that happened just a few weeks ago, and as I studied Isaiah 58, I realized we find a people in Isaiah that are crying out for justice. In verse 3, God says, you're saying this, you're crying out for justice, you're saying, why have we fasted and you see it not? Why have we humbled ourselves and you take no knowledge of it? They just want justice. They're saying to God, hey, we're doing everything right. We're not posting anything on social media. We're not using bad words. We're not, they're saying we're fasting. We're humbling ourselves. We're doing everything right, God. Why don't you see it? They're crying out for justice. And God answers them. And God answered me. And God says, true justice. True justice is served when we serve others. So often we want justice for ourselves. So often we want justice when somebody has wronged us, but God is going to tell his people in Isaiah, Jesus is going to preach it throughout the New Testament. We're going to discover it today together, that true justice is served when we serve others. As I studied over the last few weeks for this sermon, I was interested in this word justice in the Old Testament. It's a Hebrew word. The word is mishpat. And mishpat is a very big, complex word. It's used over 200 times in the Old Testament, but it's translated over 20 different ways. And when a word is translated that many ways, you know it has a lot of meaning to it. That this word for justice, this Hebrew word mishpat that God uses, that God's people use, that the prophets use, it's got a lot to it. There's a lot behind it. So before we dive into this passage in Isaiah, let's at least look at this word mishpat a little bit together. The first meaning is one that I think we all get real quickly, that justice is treating people equitably. Sounds good, makes sense. But the Hebrew meaning continues, acquitting or punishing every person on the merits of the case, regardless of race or social status. Now, we get this too, because Lady Justice or whatever that's at the Supreme Court, the statue of the woman with the scales, what's she wearing over her eyes? A blindfold. Because she's not supposed to be looking at race or economic status or social class or anything like that. She's supposed to be looking at the stuff that happened, the law that it's about, and make the decision. Justice is blind. And so we understand this too. That justice is about giving every person, rich or poor, black or white, whatever it is, justice based off of the merits of the case. And in the time of the Old Testament, we have the rich using the legal system to advantage themselves and the poor being crushed by the legal system. And so we cry out for mishpat, for justice. But more than that, mishpat also means giving people their rights. In Deuteronomy chapter 18, God talks about the Levites, the priests. And he says, the priests, give to the priests 10% of all the sacrifices. Give to the priests land. Give to the priests protection and care. And every time God says that, he says, give them their mishpat. Give them their justice. And so the definition of justice begins to expand a little bit to include not just the rights like the punishment they deserve, but justice includes care. Justice includes protection. But the definition of mishpat gets even deeper. And we learn as we study this word in the Old Testament that justice means taking up the care and cause of the vulnerable. That justice means taking up the care and the cause of the vulnerable. And often the vulnerable are defined as widows, orphans, the poor, and the immigrant. Throughout Scripture, those four are connected to the most vulnerable of society. The orphan, the widow, the immigrant, the poor. In a pre-modern agrarian society, these were the people that were most likely going to be affected, that if the economy had just a little bit of a downturn, if there was an army that began to invade and they had to go to war, if there was any sort of famine or drought, these were the people that were going to die first. These were the people on the fringes of the society, the most vulnerable out there. And God says justice includes caring for them and fighting for their cause. Because that's what mishpat is. And so we see that true justice is served when we serve others. But why? Why are we doing this? You know, it's interesting. Mishpat is a word that we find throughout the Old Testament, I said, but it's also a concept that we see throughout Scripture. I'd like to look at some verses where we see this thought that continues throughout Scripture. The first is in Job chapter 31. In Job chapter 31, we find Job, and if you guys remember the story of Job, Job was this incredibly wealthy man. He had a great family, great home. He had all this land. He had all these flocks. He had all this wealth, and all of it is taken from him. And he's sitting there in a pile of ashes with barely any clothes on, and he's got a pot shard, and he's digging out the boils on his skin. And he's arguing with God, and he's saying, God, why has all this happened? And in Job chapter 31, he says, God, I have fed the hungry. God, I have clothed the naked. God, I have cared for the orphan and the widow. I've done all these things, so why is this happening to me? You see, in Job's brain, we begin to understand that those who follow God understand that justice is a part of their life. And Job's saying, God, I'm doing all the right stuff. Why is this happening? In James chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, James says, true religion is this, to care for the orphan and to look after the widow. That in the Old Testament and the New Testament alike, that true justice is served when we serve others. And in Matthew chapter 25, in some of the scariest verses that I read in Scripture, one of the most scary teachings of Jesus, he says this. Jesus says that at the end of time, at Judgment Day, I'm going to bring everyone before me, and I'm going to stick half of you on my right, and I'll call you sheep. And I'm going to stick half of you on my left, and I'll call you goats. And to all you sheep, I'll say, thank you. When I was hungry, you fed me. When I was in prison, you visited me. When I was sick, you took care of me. And the sheep will turn to Jesus and say, Jesus, when did we see you hungry or naked or thirsty or in prison? And he'll say, whatever you did to the least of these, you did to me. And then he'll turn to the goats. You guys wish you sat on the other side today, don't you? And he'll say, you guys didn't feed me when I was hungry. You didn't clothe me when I was naked. You didn't visit me in prison. And they'll say, Jesus, when did we see you there? And he'll say, whatever you did not do for the least of these, you did not do for me. Now get away from me. It's a chilling teaching of Jesus Christ, but he reminds us that true justice is served as we serve others. Let's read some of our verses again from the passage today, Isaiah chapter 58, starting in verse 6. God says to his people, is not this the fast that I choose, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover him and not to hide yourself from your own flesh. Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, here I am. If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of wickedness, if you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness. Justice is served when we serve others. And as I studied, I asked myself, why? Why is it this way? And two quick answers are, one, God identifies with the vulnerable. God identifies with the poor. In fact, in Psalm chapter 68, verses 4 and 5, the psalm writers give God this title. They say, he is father of the fatherless, protector of the widows. Father of the fatherless, protector of the widows. That is the God that we serve. He embraces the identity of the poor and vulnerable in who he calls himself. But also, Jesus
Jesus came to serve the vulnerable, to save the vulnerable. You know, in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus starts his public ministry in chapter 4. The gospel writer Luke wants us to see some background of Jesus and some of his early things that are happening. But in Luke chapter 4, the gospel writer makes it clear that Jesus' public ministry is beginning. And Jesus is in a synagogue. And as was custom, the scroll, the Torah, the scripture was taken off the wall and passed around the room. And Jesus grabs the scroll and he opens it up into Isaiah 61, which is part of this giant passage here in Isaiah, and he reads this. Jesus reads these words as his beginning of his ministry, and he says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives, and the opening of the prison to those who are bound, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Jesus is saying, "I have come to break the cycles of bondage, of poverty, of injustice. I've come to break the cycle of sin and of death." Jesus says, "I have come to rescue you." And he identifies the vulnerable and the poor among them. You know, there's a great part of this passage in Luke that I can't get to. I wanted to. But he ends what he says there, "I've come to proclaim the day of the Lord's favor." And that's a great phrase. It goes back to the year of Jubilee in the Old Testament. And so I'll just say this. We have a little podcast that we do after the sermon. Trav calls it the cutting room floor. It's all the things that we want to share with you this morning that we can't. So if you log on this week, I'm going to talk about the year of Jubilee, Leviticus 25, and how that is part of Jesus' ministry. But I can't say it all because we have things to do today. So I'll keep going. Because the big question out there that I still want to get to is this: how do we live out justice? If true justice is serve as we serve others, what does that look like? How do we live that out as a community and as individuals? And the first thing I believe our scripture passage in Isaiah tells us today is that we live out justice with the right movement. That we have to have the right movement. In verse 7, we read, "Bring the homeless poor into your house." In verse 10, we read, "If you pour yourself out for the hungry." See, there is a movement here that when we're seeking justice, when we're serving the vulnerable, when we're seeking to break the cycles of injustice in our community, we've got to move into it. But so often we have a wait and see moment that I only care about justice when the hotel in Buffalo loses my car. Then I want justice. But Jesus says, we gotta move into it. We gotta find it. That there are people in your midst that are caught in the cycle of injustice, the vulnerable and the poor among you, and you've gotta move towards them, not away from them. Don't isolate yourselves from them, but seek them out. I was with my son this week, and we were at a store, and I don't know if this happens to you much at stores, but stores, it's sort of their big thing now, it feels like. My bill rang up to $16.02, and then before I checked out, they said, "Would you like to round up to $17 to give to charity?" Has that ever happened to anybody when they're checking out a store? And I thought, well, let me tell you what I really thought. I thought, $16.02, it's almost a full dollar that I have to round up. If it was $16.98, sure, 2 cents, take it, right? That's how awful your pastor is. That was the first thought that went through my mind. The second thought was I looked at Wyatt, my 9-year-old, who's looking at me like, "Dad, why are you taking so long to answer her? Of course you want to round up 98 cents. So then I rounded up 98 cents. Then I was like trying to make up for my pause, and I'm like, what charity am I giving to, you know? And then I got in the car, and I started really thinking about what just happened. And so often we have those experiences where we give 98 cents and you know what? We feel great about it because we feel like, ah, I did justice. But you know what? In those moments, we didn't do justice. We did charity. Because charity is voluntary. Charity means I can give or I cannot give. That's okay. But justice is a command. Jesus says, move towards it. Move into it. Go seek it out in your community. It's why I get so excited about our Next 40 initiative. And if you don't know what that means, come to the next Chapel Family Update. But at our last Chapel Family Update, we talked about where we believe Jesus is calling us to as a family of faith. And it's one, to church plant, and we know Doug's going to do that. Two, we're going to expand our program to children with special needs, our Worship Buddies program. And three, we're going to partner with ICM and some churches in Thailand to really get involved in the human trafficking scene there and to see what we can do to help. And those three initiatives we've talked about as our next 40, and what I get so excited is they're all movement towards injustice. They're all movement towards the vulnerable. But as Travis, our lead pastor, talked about in the Chapel Family Update, he said there's a fourth initiative, and that's you. It's me. It's us. That as individuals, we have to be moving into these things in our life. And one of the privileges of being a pastor here at the chapel is I get to hear the stories of how you're doing that. Because I've watched individuals in our congregation move from doing charity to doing justice, to pouring out their souls for the vulnerable. I saw one woman. She was interested every time she went to Busch Gardens to read the name tag of where the different workers were from. Have you done that? Like sometimes it just says Virginia, and you're like, oh yeah, local. And then sometimes it says China or Japan or Ukraine or Czechoslovakia or whatever is on their name tag. And she was interested in that. But she didn't just ask them a couple questions like, why'd you come to the U.S.? She really wanted to get to know them. And so do you know what she started doing? She started showing up where they lived. And when she discovered where they lived, it was eight of them in one hotel room. It's all they could afford living off their salary here. So she started bringing them food. She started bringing them to church. And she started pouring out her life for the people in our community that are vulnerable. I met another family. They go to a restaurant. It's their favorite family restaurant. And they had the same waitress many times. And they left the waitress a big tip a few times because we've all done that, right? Like, oh, look at me. I'm leaving a big tip. Ha ha. And then they said, no, that's charity. I want to do justice. And so they got to know their waitress. They invited her into their lives. And then we all watched as she was baptized in this baptismal. Because they decided to move into justice, to move towards the vulnerable in our society. I see a gentleman right here that decided that our international students needed means of transportation. So he started collecting the bikes that William and Mary confiscates, and he bought them, and he fixed them up, and he gave them to international students so that they could have transportation in town because he wanted to pour himself out into it. The other day I was at lunch and there was a woman there that had taken an adult that is disabled who can't use public transportation anymore. She decided to take her to her physical therapy appointment and then out to lunch, not because she wanted to do charity, but because she wanted to do justice. She wanted to pour her life out for the vulnerable and to move toward them. Justice is served when we serve others, and we have to have the right movement. But we also have to have the right mindset. And this one got me. In the second half of verse 7, God says to his people, do not hide yourself from your own flesh. This phrase, your own flesh, we know this phrase, right? We grab our child and we say, ah, my own flesh and blood. Maybe even a cousin, my own flesh and blood. But we don't walk down Duke of Gloucester Street and grab some tourist and be like, ah, my flesh and blood. You know, they'd be like, kick you in the shins and run the other way. Because flesh and blood means family. But God is saying that here. He's saying, as you clothe the naked, don't turn away from them, for they are your own flesh and blood. And so often we have a mindset that's different when we're serving the vulnerable. We think things like, well, I'm way better than they are. We think that could never be me. But God continues. He says, in verse 9, he says, if you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of wickedness, because we do this with the vulnerable too. We say things like, if only you had made better decisions. If only you had dealt with your pain with healthier avenues. And we wag our finger and God says, stop it. If you want to have a right mindset about serving the vulnerable, then you better understand that we're all made in the image of Christ. John Oswalt, an Old Testament scholar, wrote in his commentary on Isaiah these words. He said, "Oppression of the poor and the weak will not stop, ultimately, until they are no longer seen as objects of scorn and contempt, or as pitiable victims. They must be seen as persons of worth and dignity, brothers and sisters under God." The movement of thought here is profound. From removal of the acts of oppression to removal of the attitudes on which oppression depends, to a sacrifice of oneself for the sake of those who have been oppressed.
I had a privilege recently of going to the Chesterfield County Jail with one of my friends. There's a sheriff in Chesterfield County that is overwhelmed by the opioid crisis, the addiction to heroin. And the prisons, the jails, they're being flooded with heroin addicts. But the Chesterfield County sheriff, he knows Jesus, and he knows that the only thing that's going to break the cycle, the yoke that is on these people is Jesus Christ. And so regardless of what the law says, he is bringing Jesus into the prison, and he's inviting pastors and lay people and anybody to come and to teach about Jesus and to study the Bible with these prisoners. And he's set up communities within his jail where they hold each other accountable, and they pray together, and they worship together, and they memorize scripture together. And my friends and I got to visit. And we got to teach and we got to share, and that was great. But then even better, we got to listen. My friend and I began to hear the stories, horrible stories, of the atrocities that some of these men and women had experienced in their life. The journey that led them to where they are now. And my friend who left the prison with me that day said something very profound. He said, "I have looked down my nose at these people my whole life. But today I realize they are just like me." True justice is served when we serve others. It means moving toward the vulnerable. It means changing our mindset about the vulnerable. But we can't miss the last point. And that is that we have to have the right motive, too. Because if we're serving the vulnerable because we feel guilty, well, that's not going to last very long, and that's really not a great motive, right? We do that with our kids sometimes. We try to motivate them with guilt. It doesn't work well. We're not setting them up for long-term success. And Jesus does not want to motivate us with guilt. And he doesn't want to motivate us with this promise that somehow if we do this, we'll become more righteous, right? Sometimes we think if we just serve more, God will like me more. And that's horrible theology. Sometimes we serve because we want to feel better. Sometimes we serve because we want to look better. But all of these motives are wrong, and all of these motives lead to the wrong kind of actions. But scripture tells us that if there is a motive that is going to move us to the vulnerable and change our mindsets about them, then our motive has to be grace. As we read Isaiah 58, you keep reading about fasting. And the people are fasting because it's the Day of Atonement, the one day of year where the high priest would walk into the Holy of Holies, where God's presence dwelt, with animal blood that had been sacrificed. And with that cleansing of with the sprinkling of blood on the Ark of the Covenant, the sins of the people were forgiven. And everybody in the community knew it had nothing to do with them. That blood that wasn't their own had to be sacrificed for their sins to be forgiven. And so they fasted in response. They became humble in response. In response to the grace that God had given them and shown them.
As I was researching this week, I came across a sermon by a Reverend Robert Murray McShane from the Church of Scotland. He lived in the early 1830s. He put together an annual reading plan of scripture that many of us use today. If you read that annual plan where you get through the Old Testament once because it's long enough, and the New Testament twice, and Psalms twice, if you ever read that annual plan, that's Reverend Robert Murray McShane. But after he died at the age of 29, his friends put together all of his sermons, all the notes from his sermons. And in that book, he has a sermon entitled, "It is Better to Give Than to Receive." And because I want our motivation, as we move into the lives of the vulnerables, we pour out our souls for the vulnerable. Because I want our motivation to be grace, I'm going to conclude with part of his sermon. And maybe he can teach me and all of us about grace and justice. Now, dear Christians, some of you pray to be branches of the true vine. You pray to be made all over in the image of Christ. If so, you must be like him in giving. A branch bears the same kind of fruit as the tree. If you be branches at all, you must bear the same fruit. What would have become of us if Christ had been as saving of his blood as some of you are of your money? Objection! My money is my own. I've earned it. Answer: Christ might have said, my blood is my own. My life is my own. Then where should we have been? Objection! The poor are undeserving. Answer: Christ might have said the same thing. They are wicked rebels against my Father's law. Shall I lay down my life for these? But no, he gave his blood for the undeserving. He gave his blood for you. Objection: the poor may abuse it. Answer: Christ might have said the same with far greater truth. Christ knew that thousands would trample his blood under their feet, that most would despise it, that many would make it an excuse for sinning more. Yet he gave his own blood. Oh my dear Christians, if you would be like Christ, give much, give often, give freely to the vile and the poor, the thankless and the undeserving. Remember his own word: it's more blessed to give than to receive. True justice is served when we serve others. May we celebrate the service of Christ to us as we take communion this morning. As we take communion, the undeserving, the poor, the hopeless. And may we understand what we have in Jesus Christ.